Welcome back, everyone. It's been a while, but we are glad to be back on the Get Fit podcast series. And today we have a really fun conversation with Chef Emily Berner from the Institute of Culinary Education right here in Pasadena. We talk all things cooking, lifestyle, vegan options, favorite recipes, you name it, we give it a go. A couple of quick disclaimers about the podcast. This information is not intended to replace your healthcare professional. Opinions of hosts and guests do not represent the views or opinions of Kaiser Foundation Health Plan, Kaiser Foundation Hospitals, or Southern California Permanente Medical Group. Neither KFHP, KFH, or SCPMG receive any compensation for products or services mentioned on the show, nor do they endorse or promote any products mentioned. With that, enjoy the show. Chef Emily, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So we've got a ton of stuff to get into, but typically how we like to start is we're going to just hear a little bit about you. Where are you from? When did you know you wanted to be a chef? What can you tell us about yourself?
Oh, well, I'm from New York originally. I moved to LA about 2 years ago, and my training was at the Natural Gourmet Institute for Health Supportive Culinary Arts, which was sort of a hippy-dippy culinary school in the city that not a lot of people knew about. But I loved their plant-based program so much, and I think the turning point for me was when I realized how impactful a program like that could be on changing lives and really supporting people on their health and wellness paths. So I decided over 12 years ago that I really wanted to give back what my teachers had given to me and share that message with more people. Took a little bit of time to get there. The Natural Gourmet closed, but ICE purchased all of their curriculum. And now our plant-based program has its roots in the program that I went to over a decade ago. So it's been a really awesome full circle journey. When I first went to culinary school, I actually didn't think I wanted to be a chef. I thought I really just want to nourish the people around me and nourish myself. We all have to eat, so how can I do that in a way that is healthy for myself and my community?
Now tell the folks, what does ICE mean?
ICE is the Institute of Culinary Education. Yes, so that is the school that I'm currently teaching at, and I've been there for 2 years now.
Okay, great. And so you mentioned, you know, nourishing people and being plant-based. Is that kind of how you grew up, or was that something your family was into, or how did this kind of all start?
Yeah, not at all. My family, my mother is French, so for us it was quite, you know, she would cook things like rabbit and things that, like, I would never dream of eating now. But that was the upbringing, was very much whatever's on the table, that's for dinner and that's what you eat. And the plant-based sort of philosophy, I think, came to me when I was about 18. And I don't know if you remember that documentary, Food Inc.
Sure.
That came out. So I watched that when it came out in theaters, and I was just blown away by the industries in our country and how we are treating animals and how it's all become this this really, you know, pretty wild food system. And I wanted to move away from that. So I decided I would practice a vegan diet and see how that landed. And I did that for about a year. And I felt okay, but I didn't actually feel amazing.
You mean like physically, mentally?
Yeah. And I think, you know, I was quite young, and I didn't really know how to create nutritionally balanced plant-based plates. So mostly I was relying on tons of carbs, and I was more a carbitarian than I was a vegetarian or vegan, because I just didn't really know how to balance my plate and how to create something that had enough plant-based protein on it to sustain me. I've always been quite athletic and active, and so I wasn't feeling like I was getting enough of the protein. And that's often what you hear as soon as you become plant-based is, oh my gosh, how do you get enough protein? So I really had to learn that. So I met with a nutritionist, and she guided me on how to do better with that. So that's sort of where the plant-based journey began. But when I moved to France and I was vegan in 2012, they look at you like you have three heads. Like, I'm sorry, you're in Paris and you don't eat cheese and butter? And like, what? What kind of you know, person are you? So now, thankfully, now France is a little more flexible, a little more understanding of vegan and plant-based diets. But at that time, it really was an anomaly. It was a challenge.
So tell us, what does plant-based actually mean? That's been kind of a hot topic in our organization, and a lot of people have been kind of promoting it and encouraging people to follow that lifestyle. Mm. But you just mentioned things like cheese and other items. Like, I'm kind of confused. Yeah. What does it mean to be plant-based?
It's a great question, and I think it's a term that's still being defined as it kind of has been rolled out. But it's a modern take on vegetarian diet. I think that's really all
can
it
you
is.
Have meat just in a plant-based diet?
No. So okay. You would not have any meat, so no chicken, any kind of poultry, no fish, no cow, pig, anything, sheep. Basically, if it's similar to vegetarian in that there's no meat, and but plant-based does occasionally plant-based eaters will occasionally consume eggs, and they will occasionally consume dairy as well. So these are two, that's different from a vegan diet, where a vegan diet will have no animal products whatsoever, even so far as to exclude honey. Some vegan eaters will choose not to have honey as well because it comes from an animal. So that's really there's not much of a distinction between plant-based and vegetarian. They're essentially the same. I think that plant-based suggests that it's just as the name suggests, it has more plants in the diet and in general, like trying to include more plants.
So I think probably the reason the term plant-based is kind of, I don't want to say controversial, but is it's just really hard to eat a lot of vegetables. I don't even know what the daily recommended allowance is these days. It's because it's ridiculously high.
Yeah.
But what, if you are plant-based, how do you maintain it? Is it through variety? Is it through, seasonal vegetables and fruits? We didn't talk about fruits really, but how does that play into it? And I think it just people see it as being really hard. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of what you come across?
Yeah, I mean, I think, unfortunately, a lot of people haven't been taught how to prepare vegetables in a way that's tasty.
Right.
There's a lot of folks out there that are boiling broccoli when it takes just as long, if not faster, to steam it, and the flavor is so much better, and you preserve more nutrients. So that's where a culinary school can really come in handy. We have programs that teach people how to cook vegetables and do it in a way that's extremely tasty. Certainly, no one's going to want to eat anything if it's not delicious. That is, you have to lead with flavor. You have to lead with what tastes good. That's the buy-in, right? Otherwise, folks are not going to go for it. We know that we have to brush our teeth for good oral hygiene and health. We know we have to eat our vegetables for good health as well. There's just not as much discipline there because if it doesn't taste good, most people won't do it. So that's where I love to show people, okay, how can we make this cabbage the most amazing cabbage you've ever had? Okay, we're going to make a slaw out of it. We're going to braise it. We're going to braise it in apple juice. And then all of a sudden it has this beautiful sweet flavor to it, and add some apples to it and have it be like a fall cabbage dish. Like, there's so many ways to make vegetables shine. It's just that people don't necessarily have the skill sets to know how to do that. And it can be really intimidating to get in a kitchen and cook something you've never worked with before. You've never made a delicata squash. Okay, how on earth do I even approach this thing, right? It's hard as a rock. Do I need to peel it? Can I eat the seeds? The answer is yes. You can actually eat the seeds. You can eat the skin. But a lot of people don't know that. So if you don't know how to approach certain vegetables, you're just not going to cook them. So it takes a lot. It's very intimidating to get in a kitchen. You have to pay for your ingredients. You have to go to the store. You have to pick up something you've never worked with before. Then you have to learn how to break it down. Then it might not taste good. And then you've spent all of this energy and effort preparing something that didn't taste good, and you have a family of four, five, six people to feed, and none of them are eating what you put on the table. So it can be very, very intimidating and challenging to even get in the kitchen and work with something you've never worked with before.
So you kind of led us into the next question, which is, you know, what we hear from our folks all the time is, well, I just don't have time to cook. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, you know, the standard American diet of things you can pick up is just going to be sugar, salt, and fat.
Yeah.
What are some of the ways you can kind of overcome those obstacles? Because as you mentioned, it can be pretty time consuming and pretty mm-hmm. difficult. I'm assuming over time it just gets easier, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You didn't learn to walk or run overnight.
Right.
You had to crawl first, and eventually you got faster, and now you can run a marathon, or maybe not, but at least, you know, you have the capability. I'm a firm believer that there's no such thing as not having enough time. It's just not making it a priority. One statistic that really shocked me is that most people spend more time watching cooking shows than actually cooking.
Actually cooking, yeah.
So, you know, there's your time right there, right? Cook along. Find something that you are inspired by on TV. There's so many wonderful resources. Culinary School obviously is a fantastic resource, but you have the internet. You have the world at your fingertips. So there's so much you can, if you're inspired by something, give it a try, give it a shot. You know, if you get your family to weigh in on it, right? Saw this baked feta on TikTok with tons of tomatoes. You know, what you talk about it at your dinner table. What do you think? Should we try it? Get the whole family to buy in, and that will make it a lot easier so that you're not in it alone. Accessibility is also an issue sometimes. There are plenty of people who live in food deserts that do not have access to fantastic, beautiful farmers market produce and things like that, and it's really expensive. Most of the time, grocery stores will carry some basic things, potatoes, onions, garlic, you know, dried beans, rice. These are some things that you can even pick up at gas stations now. So see what's available in your area. See what your family is interested in trying, and do it together as a community, because it's so much more powerful when everybody is involved in that.
It's kind of interesting how many correlations there are between food and exercise. You know, with exercise, there's a lot of people that are like, well, if I don't have at least a half hour, what's the point? You know what mm-hmm. I mean? To whereas, well, if I don't have any fresh fruits and vegetables, what's the point? And I think, you know, much like exercise, 5 minutes is good. A bag of frozen peas is good. A bag of carrots is good.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't a plug for Trader Joe's, but there's so many good options in the freezer section there.
Yeah.
You know, there's a vegetable hash that's amazing to put in some food. And I think the other thing you kind of touched on was if you do have the ability to maybe grow things in a garden or go somewhere and pick your own. I mean, my wife to this day remembers being a little girl and picking tomatoes out of her garden and making BLTs. Mm-hmm. And to this day, like, there's not a BLT that will satisfy her because it's not from a tomato in her garden that was still warm from the sun.
Wow.
You know, and we also at Kaiser Permanente, we've learned, you know, when we talk about kids and their unwillingness to eat vegetables, when we get the kids to grow their own vegetables, they can't wait to eat them.
Yeah.
It changes the narrative completely. So I think this is perfect timing. You know, we live in Southern California. There's so many farmers markets.
Yeah.
There's so many good fresh fruits and vegetables. I think, Robert, that's a great question, you know, talking about the frozen vegetables. I think, you know, another thing I wanted to ask you is, you know, we also hear the term food is medicine quite a bit. You know, what are some of the benefits of a plant-based diet? From a physical standpoint, I think in particular, I think what everyone's most interested, can it help with inflammation? Can it help reduce inflammation? There's a lot of people in a lot of pain these days.
Yeah. I mean, food really is our original medicine, right? Before we had Kaiser Permanente and we had all of this access to wonderful healthcare, food was where we went to for our medicinal needs. If you had a headache, you could make some rosemary tea. Or if you had some like bronchial issues, you make some thyme and ginger tea and drink that, and it would help to open everything up. So there's so many ways in which herbs and food really do support our health and wellness. And I truly believe that the earth gives us everything that we need in order for us to be healthy, and then it's just up to us what we want to do with it. But there are numerous studies that show how following a plant-based diet can do things like reducing inflammation, can improve heart health, improve LDL cholesterol numbers, and get those into balance. Numerous studies that indicate, and for mental health as well, this is one thing that is particularly of interest to me, is when you include more plants in your diet and you have more of a variety of different plants, you're feeding your microbiome. And so that's a big word that a lot of people throw around and don't really know what it means. But the way that I like to break it down is essentially each and every one of us has our own garden in our own systems. Your gut is like that garden. So in order to take care of the garden, first of all, you need good soil. You need to plant some good seeds, and then you need to grow those seeds as well. So the plants, every single plant has a slightly different type of fiber. And we mostly think about fiber as insoluble and soluble, and that's it. But a black bean, a kidney bean, a pinto bean, three different types of bean, all have slightly different types of fibers. Very, very slight. And each of those fibers will actually feed. That becomes the soil of your garden. Your plants that have different fibers become the soil. When you have a rich and diverse soil, and then you plant your seeds in that soil, they're more likely to grow and do well. Now, the seeds are going to be your probiotic rich foods, right? Your sauerkraut, your yogurt, your kefir, your kimchi, all those beautiful foods that are fermented, have a fermented quality, and are full of what are called probiotics. Those are going to get planted into your system and create a really healthy, beautiful, diverse garden. When you have that diversity of plants, you're feeding your microbiome. And in doing that, when you have a more diverse microbiome, you actually have better immune system. Often your mental health is much improved if you have conditions that you're struggling with, like depression or anxiety, which we have a lot of in this country. That is directly linked to our microbiomes. So that mind-gut connection that everybody's talking about is a real thing. And there's a lot that we can do to alter that just with food. So that's just a small example of how food can really become our medicine.
That's so interesting. You know, because Robert and I are trainers, I keep mm-hmm. going back to the correlations between the two. You know, when you're feeling like you don't have a lot of energy, we tell people to work out. And they're like, that doesn't make any sense. I don't have energy. Why would I work out? Well, mm-hmm. if you worked out, you would have some energy. And I think the interesting mm-hmm. thing about what we're seeing with mental health right now, and keep in mind, none of us are doctors, but if you're not feeling well, mm-hmm. and then you go have some fast food or some mm-hmm. sugar or some carbs, you're making the situation worse.
Yeah.
You know, and I go back to also, you know, how do you feel after you eat food? Like, I think about mm-hmm. the times when I have had a primarily plant-based meal mm-hmm. versus like some carbs or some meat or a lot of sugar. Like, you don't feel so good after mm-hmm. that meal. To whereas plant-based, you're like, I feel pretty good. I still feel pretty light. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Ready to go do an activity. But I hadn't really thought about it till you just mentioned it, the mm-hmm. kind of the correlation to mental health and well-being.
Yeah. And food is meant to restore us and nourish us, right? So if you're not feeling very restored or nourished after you eat, it might be a good time to kind of assess your diet and think about, okay, what do I need to shift here? And it doesn't have to be over a big overhaul. Like you said, with exercise, just put your shoes on, get out the door for 5 minutes, right? Start with one thing. I find that, because I'm also a health coach, and I find that when we make these 1 degree turns, right, just substituting, you know, potato, well, potatoes maybe not the best example, but just making a substitution of something for your broccoli or something for a salad once a day, or just those 1 degree turns can be so powerful. And that's how you get people to buy into this type of eating. Is it doesn't have to be a massive overhaul, because that's not going to be sustainable if all of a sudden you're, okay, I'm not doing any of it anymore. I'm just going to go plant-based. There's some people for whom that works. I find that after about 3 months, they tend to go back to how they were eating before. So they'll do it as a quick detox or a cleanse, or, but really the best type of detoxes and cleanses are ones that are constant, ones that you're constantly doing on smaller, more gentle ways and more incremental than a huge overhaul that's not going to be sustainable, and you're going to peter out and get tired, because it takes a lot of effort to do a huge overhaul. But something small, switching your breakfast to a nut butter and some apples and some, some like a rice cake or something. I mean, that doesn't sound as delicious as it could be, but for people who are on the go, like, that's a very easy thing to switch to. And it's still protein and healthy carbs and fat and stuff like that.
I did want to ask you, thinking about the Culinary Institute of Education, what is your approach to, like, cultural differences? My grandma, she cooked with lard, had a pot of beans.
Which is kind of back right now.
Right. a lot of tortillas and meats, mm-hmm. and cheeses. We do hear from a lot of folks that culture can sometimes mm-hmm. get in the way of what they're trying to achieve personally. You go to a big family reunion or a big get together, and there's always cakes and cookies, and we tend to always celebrate kind of like love for our families with food, right? Very long question, but is that something that's kind of addressed in your teachings and into the chefs that you train?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so important to have cultural humility when teaching these classes. I come from a French background, but in our programs, I'm teaching Italian food and Mexican food. And certainly I approach that with a lot of humility, and I'm not the expert in those cultures. But it doesn't mean that I'm not going to celebrate them and enjoy them and share as much as I know about them. I think, I had a student actually who, wonderful student who came from a Latin background, and she really ran into exactly this issue that you're discussing, and she wanted to expose her culture, her community, to other foods, and she just found like it was always the same staple foods, rice, beans, tortillas, beautiful foods, nothing wrong with them whatsoever, but she was like, I just want them to eat quinoa. I want them to try quinoa. And they won't try it. I was like, okay, well, like, how have you approached it? Well, I made a big pot of quinoa and I put it on the table, and people weren't really interested in it. It's like, all right, well, what if you made, what could we do instead? All right, gallo pinto. That's something that she's like, we make that a lot. Rice, beans, make a sofrito, and then put all of that together. It's like, all right, well, instead of just big pot of quinoa on the table, that first of all, I like quinoa, but plain on its own, I'm not even the biggest fan of plain quinoa on its own. So how can you make this delicious? All right, well, make your gallo pinto the same way you always make it, and then substitute half the rice for some cooked quinoa and cook it all together and see. Right, again, it's those 1 degree turns and those baby steps. I don't think that when we push food on people that it works. I've never seen that work. Never seen anyone eat this. I've tried a lot. And if someone really, really cares, they might take a bite, but it's more likely that you'll be met with resistance. So start from a point where you can then expand from. Right. So starting with something that's familiar, something that doesn't feel completely unusual to them, and then slowly build from there. Okay, next time I'm going to make the gallo pinto with 2/3 quinoa and 1/3 rice. just as, you know, as in getting fit, it doesn't happen overnight, right? It just starts with putting your shoes on and taking it one step at a time.
It is really, I was going to say really funny, but it's not funny that people get really offended when you try to introduce something new to them. Yeah. You know, I keep bringing everything back to exercise, but you know, a lot of people are like, you don't need to tell me how to exercise. You know what I mean? Like I do my own thing. And I think people are very protective of the types of foods that they like to eat, even if those foods aren't necessarily that good for them. Mm-hmm. One of the things my family did was we started eating cauliflower rice.
Oh, nice.
And we just put it on the table one day with company without explaining what it was. And people just ate it. Like, what is this? Oh, it's actually cauliflower. You know what I mean? So, cool. But had we said, you know, hey, we're doing this for you to be healthier, they probably would have had a different reaction as opposed to just, you know, trying it. So I think to your point, a lot of times these foods, if we could just get them to try it a little bit, we'd have more success.
And if you need to be sneaky about it, be sneaky about it. You know, that's okay too. Make mac and cheese for your family, but puree some butternut squash and fold that in there and tell no one and just see what happens. You know, that's totally fine. A lot of people, like you said, they will meet that with resistance. So it's okay to try it that way as well. And you know your family, you know your community's best. And if you know what you're up against, then you probably know the best way in.
So I'm gonna put you on the spot here as a plant-based chef. You're having a dinner party.
Okay.
You really want to wow your guests. What are you making?
What am I making? Ooh.
And hopefully convert some folks into more of a plant-based diet.
Right, it's a mixed crowd, not...
Mixed crowd. Okay, all right. That's a really good question because there are so many things I love to cook. I think some of my favorite flavor profiles are Middle Eastern flavor profiles. I really love... one of my favorite chefs is Ottolenghi. I think he is just a whiz with vegetables. So I would probably dive into some of those books and pull something from there. I love that he makes this gorgeous roasted acorn squash with za'atar, and that's perfect for this time of year too, right? So I would be thinking first seasonally, what's in season?
What's za'atar?
Za'atar is a fantastic spice mix.
Spice, okay.
Yeah, it's a spice mix that comes from the originally from the Middle East, but it's a mix of sumac and thyme and sesame seeds. And if you can't, you know, find za'atar, you can look up like how to make your own mix. A lot of spice mixes, actually, you can make your own from basic spices that you have in your own cabinet. So I would probably roast that in some za'atar and serve that over like a thick yogurt labneh and drizzle that with like pomegranate molasses and toasted cumin pumpkin seeds. That might be a start. And then
so you guys can't see this, but her face is like totally lighting up right now. So
that
she's
would be
pretty
a start. Yeah,
this.
That sounds like a good dish. Maybe some pomegranate seeds on top. I love a good flatbread. I think that would go really nicely with a flatbread. And you know, having bread at the table, I think, you know, our carbs have gotten a really bad reputation. It's something that we can enjoy and break bread with our communities in you know,
and you need carbs.
In moderation.
I mean,
and
you need a little
carbs.
Sugar. You do need some of these things.
Exactly.
We've just overdone it.
Bodies run on glucose, but when we have too much glucose, obviously that can lead to trouble. So I would start with that, maybe a flatbread, a nice big salad of maybe some arugula. I love arugula, and that would go really well with the pumpkin as well. I'd do an arugula salad with probably a citrus vinaigrette to go with. And let's see, what else would I put on there? Well, we need a protein. We'll need some kind of a protein, right? I think either a tofu kebab would go well with that kind of a dish. If you marinate your tofu and then thread it on a skewer. People love to eat things on skewers. Mm-hmm. I found is especially kids. They're like, if they get to pick it off a stick, they're like, whoa, this is so cool. So,
would you grill that? Would you? Okay.
Yeah. So creating some kind of interactive, you know, something where it's kind of fun to eat. can be really helpful for people who are a little less interested in tofu. I think tofu tastes like a wet sponge if you do nothing to it.
Right.
Because it has that texture, and you have to know how to prepare it properly. So doing a nice marinade or a dry rub, letting that sit for a while, or tempeh. I actually love tempeh, and it's really underutilized. Tempeh would be great on a skewer as well, and marinating that. But one thing that people don't really realize about tempeh, and for those who don't know what tempeh is, it's a fermented soybean. So if you have trouble digesting tofu, because it is a soybean ultimately, you'll have an easier time digesting tempeh, unless, of course, you have a soy allergy. But because it's a fermented soy product, it's a lot easier for folks to digest. So you could, tempeh is something that does best when it's either steamed or marinated in overheat. So you put your tempeh in a marinade and then put that on the stovetop and let that kind of heat together as it's marinating. Because when it's heating, it's kind of opening up the pores of the tempeh so it can soak up so much more flavor. And you know, tempeh, again, doesn't taste good when you take it out of the package. It's like same as tofu. You have to manipulate these vegetable proteins in order to get them to be quite flavorful. Some people like raw tofu, but I'm not a huge fan.
Tofu is such a bad word. You know what I mean? People are like, yeah. Oh, you're plant-based? Well, I'm not eating tofu. You know? Oh, you're healthy? You're one of those tofu people? Like, mm-hmm. Why is tofu always correlated with trying to eat better?
Yeah. And if you told me that all I could eat as a plant-based eater was tofu, I wouldn't do it myself. I just don't think it's very delicious. Again, we have to lead with flavor.
Right.
So that's where a culinary program like ours, we can teach you how to manipulate these proteins. We can teach you how to work with them so that they can be extremely delicious and flavorful. There's a lot of packaged existing plant-based burgers and ground meats that are out there as well. If you're interested in trying those, I have nothing against those. Personally, I find them quite hard to digest and really high in sodium. So I don't really enjoy eating them, but some people, that's the solution. I have a friend who, you know, he wanted to follow a vegan diet and he's been doing it for 3 months now, and he relies on those things, right? It really has helped him to feel like he's got the satisfaction and protein from his meal. So I have nothing against those if that's what will kind of help you. But I think an over-reliance on any packaged or processed food is probably not a good thing. And they do tend to be quite high in sodium, so it's something to be careful with.
Yeah, I think some of those products, when it became really trendy to replace meat with some of these products and companies, you know, in the long term, they discovered not even really all that much better for you than if you were to eat the actual meat product.
Mm.
I think one of the things I've tried to do with my family and with others is, you know, if somebody really likes hamburgers or pizza or whatever, just to try to make it a little better.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Throw
yeah.
some spinach on your burger and mushrooms and tomatoes and, you know, you can load it up.
Yeah.
With veggies, and the same with pizza. Pizza doesn't have to be pepperoni and sausage.
And again, finding those access points. Nobody's going to be happy if you're taking away the things that they love. That's not going to bring joy or any kind of satisfaction. And food is meant to be something that we should be joyful about. We're receiving nourishment. And that sort of connection to joy and pleasure through food, it's unfortunately really been... I think people are quite stressed out about what to eat, how much do I eat, you know, how do I stay healthy, how does food fit into this, but I don't want to, you know, let go of this, that, or the other. Like, I had pizza for dinner last night. It was fantastic. I it was leftover pizza from the weekend. It was a great, like, pumpkin pizza with, I think they put some kind of greens on there and goat cheese. And so I heated it up. I just took a ton of spinach, cooked that down, put that on top, 2 poached eggs over the whole thing, and it was a great dinner. So I don't suggest that, like, we try to just bulldoze everybody into eating plant-based, or it's like everybody has a different body type and your body's going to change depending on how much you exercise or how much you don't exercise, or even how old you are. We have different nutritional needs across our lifespan. And so it's so important, like you were mentioning earlier, get in touch with how the food makes you feel. It's not just what you eat, but it's how you eat it, what you eat it in combination with, and how you feel afterwards. Again, it's supposed to be restoration and nourishment. So pay attention to your energy scape. And this is a term that I don't know if anyone else has, I haven't really heard other people use it, but I'm kind of making it up because I think it's a good one, is what's like your landscape, your foodscape, your energy scape. What is that throughout the day? Mm. What do you notice about how you feel at 4 o'clock? That tells you a lot about what you ate at breakfast time. So I noticed for myself that around 4 o'clock every day, that's when I would crave sugar. And so I started calling it cookie o'clock, because that is, I was like, cookies, candy. And now there's Halloween candy everywhere right now. I have that time of year. No, keep it away. It's that time of year, right? So I have to be really careful around 4 o'clock, because I know that's usually when I tend to go for sugar. What can I do to avoid that? I can have more protein at the start of my day. More protein at the start of my day has virtually eliminated the sugar cravings at 4 o'clock. I have more sustained energy balance. Fat, healthy fats, fiber, and protein are like the logs on a fire that give you slow release of energy, whereas carbohydrates and sugars are like pouring gasoline on the flame. Super helpful sometimes, not always, right? So looking for more stable energy sources help to balance out our energy throughout the day. The other technique is to be prepared. You know you're going to hit that wall at 4 o'clock. So what are you going to do to be ready? Okay, I'm going to get some dark chocolate. I'm going to get some dates. And that's always going to be in my backpack anywhere I go. Anytime I need it, I can reach for something that's healthy, because we're just going to go for what's available. If you make those things available to yourself, that'll make it a little bit easier to make the right choice when the time comes.
The normal habits of folks when they hit that afternoon slump is either some caffeine or some sugar. Mm-hmm. You know, the same with breakfast, you know, getting a big giant muffin and a big mocha frappa, whatever, you know, you've just hit this calorie sugar bomb. There's no way you're going to feel good.
Yeah. You're setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah. And then, you know, mm-hmm. then you crash, and then you go back into that pattern. So I love how, you know, to your point of, you know, some veggies and some protein kind of keep you satiated on more mm-hmm. of an even plane throughout the day, so you don't hit those afternoon slumps.
And it's expensive to buy a muffin and a mocha frappa, la la la, every day, right? It's really expensive. So keep a jar of peanut butter at your desk. You know, find one that doesn't have any partially hydrogenated oils in it, that is a natural peanut butter. It doesn't have to be organic. Organic isn't the end-all, be-all of plant-based everything. Just find, you know, peanut butter and almond butter. Almond butter is very expensive, but something that, you know, that's going to give you good fats and protein. And you keep some, I used to keep like little rice cakes at my desk, and eat like that was my breakfast for years. And then I got on like this miso soup kick, which I can't really explain, but for like a while it was miso soup for breakfast, and I was loving that. But, you know, you just have to find, you know,
I actually love that. Because for some reason in America, breakfast has turned into this, you know, cereal, maybe some eggs, French toast, pancakes. And like, you travel, you know, I know you're from France. Like, they're like, you guys are ridiculous. Those, you know, you can have vegetables, you can have some rice.
Yeah.
You know,
most places in the world are not eating dessert for breakfast.
Right.
You know, and in France, where we do have croissants and viennoiserie and all of these like beautiful pastries, that's actually more for an afternoon snack. It's like le goûter at 4 o'clock. Well, this is probably why it's wired into me, right? It's like, genetically, it's in there. But yeah, that's when they're having their sweet treats. It's not usually at the start of the day. And I mean, cup of coffee, bread and butter is very customary in France as your breakfast, and you know, that's how they might start their day.
Well, this has been great. You know, where can people find you? Maybe some recipes, some advice, like.
Well, I have an Instagram. I don't post a lot of recipes there, but I post a lot of pictures about what we're doing in culinary school.
Okay, great.
And that's at Emily Bakes, E-M-I-L-I-E. I don't know. I kind of tend to fly under the radar. I'm not really someone who likes to advertise myself. I just really am passionate about sharing this with whoever is interested. I used to work for a hospital, the New York Presbyterian Hospital, and we did a lot of online cooking classes. So if you dug into YouTube and typed in Emily Berner, you would find a lot of my online cooking classes are still posted there. And they're still doing cooking classes online as well. So certainly there, but come to the school, come to campus. I'd be happy to show you around, give you a tour of the campus, talk to anybody about our plant-based program or any other culinary program. We now have an avocational program, which is awesome. It basically means that you can take the program because the Institute of Culinary Education was basically designed for chefs who were then going into the culinary industry. What we found is there's a lot of people who are just interested in learning to cook better for themselves and their communities. So we created this avocational program so you can go through the entire same culinary training that our chefs do, but then not do an externship program. So you don't have to go into a kitchen and do that part of the program. So it's a new program, and I think it's a really good idea for people who just want that self-improvement. We also have an online plant-based program, which is you can do fully from your own home.
Okay.
And that's something that we built because, you know, we don't want to limit this education to people who live in LA and New York, where our campuses are. We want anybody to be able to access this education. So we built this plant-based program so you can do it from the comfort of your own home, in your own kitchen. You have a chef with you throughout the entire course virtually who's going to assist and support you throughout the program. You submit, you have to get your own groceries. That's the only difference. You have to get your own groceries, but then you're submitting pictures of your work. We're evaluating your work. Every single lab that you turn in, we're going to look at and give you video comments on, and we'll talk to you about, okay, your roasted vegetables look amazing, but you should have roasted them a little bit longer because they're missing some of that gorgeous caramelization that you really want to get out of your roasted vegetables. And it's going to be so much more flavorful if you leave it in for 10 more minutes. Like that level of minute detail for every single lab that you turn in. So it's a really cool program. You can do it while you're full-time working. It's all online and it's a lot of fun.
That's awesome. That's really cool. And, you know, for our listeners out there, we are recording today at the Kaiser Permanente Bernard J. Tyson School of Medicine, and Emily and her team at ICE are just right across the street from us here in Pasadena. So we will definitely add some of those resources into the show notes. But Emily, anything else you want to add before we wrap up today?
No, it's been an absolute delight to be here with you. I appreciate your time and your thoughtfulness with your questions. And to everybody out there listening, just start with one small step. And if you are finding that there's challenges or obstacles, or you're not really finding success, try to learn about what's getting in your way and what is your true motivation? What is it that you value? What is it that you really care about? And what do you want your health for? If you start with those questions and you imbue every step you take with the why that you're taking it, that will make a huge difference in your success.
Oh, that's great. And, you know, I love it. Just one small step, and you know, we're running out of time. We didn't even get into the whole impact on the planet and all the the many wonderful reasons to have more fruits and vegetables. But you're going to see a lot more of Emily as we continue the partnership with the Culinary Institute of Culinary Education. And again, thank you for being here today, and I look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you for having me.